Okay, a call to order the House Committee on Education for March 27th. Is it March 27th? Yeah, 2017. Okay, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to start out with an informational hearing on Sherwood High School's coding program. And just by way, a little way of introduction is I was at out at Sherwood High School for a technology night and was very impressed with what the folks at Sherwood High were doing. In fact, I was blown away, but I was talking to some of the young ladies about their coding club. And I thought, yeah, I'd love to have you come down to the legislature and talk about it. And they said, okay. And so here they are on their first day of spring break down here talking about this. So with this is going to be an informational on the coding program at Sherwood High. And so I think I'll just bring you all up at one time. And first of all, Terrell Smith, who is a teacher. And then Brianna Cossia, Lori Wynn, and Brooke Mylander. So if you want to come up and welcome to our committee, we're very glad you're here.
Thank you.
And don't worry about these people look scarier than they are.
Okay. Well, hello, I'm Brianna Cossia.
I'm Carrie Wynn.
I'm Brooke Mylander. We're juniors at Sherwood High School, Chairperson Doherty and Committee. We are also the founders of our high school's chapter of Girls of Code. After being some of the few girls in our computer science classes, we started about a year and a half ago, unofficially, to spread our passion for coding with other girls in other school. We were eventually matched with an instructor and have been meeting bi-weekly since the beginning of November.
Every meeting, we talk about inspiring women in tech.
And what I'm going to have you do is when you talk again is to introduce yourself. And maybe before you ladies go on, are you going to explain to this group up here what coding is?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Yes.
I know.
And so if Mr. Smith could talk about what coding is, and then we'll get along with you. Okay?
Yeah. All right.
So time out on your prepared speech, you Chair Doherty. Yes, coding is...
And if you could identify yourself for the record, sir.
Terrell Smith, Sherwood High School, Sherwood, Oregon. Coding is defined by the businessdictionary.com, if we want to go to the formal definition, as algorithms and language that allows the human interface with machines.
Okay, thank you. So it's kind of computer designing.
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so I'm Carrie Wynn. Every meeting at our club, we talk about inspiring women in tech, learn how to code in different languages, and work on our final project as a club. Our final project is to create a website, app, or piece of technology that helps the cause that we care about. For our final project, we have chosen to create a user-friendly website that focuses on recycling and provides information on different locations of recycling centers in our community. We hope that by providing a reliable and accessible source of information about recycling, people will be encouraged to preserve our environment.
I'm Brenna Cosio. Our club has helped get more girls at our school interested in computer science, and we even have girls coming from Newburgh and Tualatin to participate in our club. We were also interviewed and featured in the Sherwood Gazette, and it was really exciting to tell the town about our club. Our club and clubs like ours provide an opportunity for people to have access to computer science curriculum, as only 25% of high schools in Oregon have coding classes. We provide access to curriculum that will help students achieve higher pay and high demand career options.
In the future, we would like to include middle schoolers in the club so we can also start getting girls more interested in coding at a younger age. In middle school, the percent of female students interested in computer science is around 66%. Then this number drops to 32% for high school students and then to 4% for college women. Programs like ours help sustain interest in computer science and encourage girls to take a deeper look at the field.
Clubs like ours are making an important positive impact on our community, and we think that is important for them for there to be more like them. Perhaps the coolest thing about coding is that it isn't limited to one field, but rather can span many. Technology enhances every aspect of life, and computer science is extremely influential on how we shape the present and the future. Girls Who Code helps girls expand their view on computer science and inspire them to combine coding knowledge with practically any other field that they're interested in. Even if they don't decide to pursue a career in computer science, they gain skills in our club, like bravery, sisterhood, and respect, that can propel them in any future career. We ask that when you are considering the monetary distribution regarding schools and programs, that you remember CTCs and the impact that classes and programs can provide for the community.
Okay, well, very good presentation. Do we have any questions for these ladies? How about Representative Vile, starting out with your representative?
Yes, I'm very proud to say that Sherwood High School is in our district, and I'm grateful that you're here. I have a question for you, Carrie. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this program might actually eventually help us to eliminate the need for our deposits on our bottles, because people will recycle even without needing the deposit money?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely believe that that would really help, because we thought that by providing like a lot of information that people like will come aware to the situation, and that this information will just spread, and then we can attack the problem once we like realize that there is a problem.
Thank you. And follow up, if I might.
Please.
This question's for your leader, your teacher, your responsible guy. And what's the name of the coding association, or the computer teachers association, Mr. Smith?
Charles Smith, Sherwood High School. I am a full-time teacher at Sherwood High School, and I've been teaching for 38 years. So I've seen a lot in the business. I also, as towards the end of my career, I'm looking to really support the idea of increasing that idea of only 25% of the schools in Oregon have a coding class. So I am the president of the Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association, is another hat that I wear, and the organization received a digital literacy grant out of this last biennium to do that very thing that is our mission on the association side, to increase that from 25%. You know what, we have some dreams. We'd like it to be 50%, and that would even be less than ideal, but it would certainly be a lot more than it currently is. So the association trains teachers and helps administrators implement high-tech education programs, including engineering and especially computer science. So that's the association hat that I wear. I don't know if that answers your question, but it is an organization that's doing significant work with that grant, the digital literacy grant from the last biennium that we'll be wrapping up in August, and we will have trained well over 400 teachers.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Smith, if you could tell us, as we begin looking at how Measure 98 is going to be implemented, and you've had a lot of experience with various programs, everything from welding shops to building trades, et cetera, how do you feel that the technology, the computer science pieces, fits into that Measure 98 piece?
Well, Measure 98 is very interesting. And I know that the legislature is struggling with how to implement that. In Sherwood High School, at Sherwood High School, we have a number of CTE programs. So I do understand that we have a broad offering. For our size of school, it's very significant, and it's been a showcase for multiple CTE programs. High-tech and engineering and computer science being two of the kind of the anchors of the CTE program. Where 98 comes in, however that funding falls out, and I'm a little concerned about the funding for 98 because of the existing $35 million that was offered and established in the last biennium for CTE and STEM initiatives to support and build programs over that period of time. And so, you know, we put the plane in the air, and we've been building it. I worry a little bit about the funding redirect, that some of the good work that's been happening with that $35 million might get redirected to Measure 98, which is not yet fully understood on how that will work. And so what I personally feel is that we need to have a funding delay. I mean, it is a voters, you know, they voted for it. Yes, it's going to be something significant in the future, but I'm thinking that needs to have a little bit of a funding delay. But as far as the Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association, we can help administrators implement their plan. So if an administrator says, out of this three-legged approach to 98 for absenteeism and dual credit and college credit and so forth, plus CTE, Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association can offer curriculum, offer and train teachers and find staff, and help administrators implement those programs and be part of that. So we can be an answer. 98 is a little bit convoluted, but OCSDA can be an answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, ladies, for being here.
Okay, Representative Parrish.
Thanks. I appreciate you girls being here as well. I'd love to hear that girls are out coding and doing this. Question for you as the instructor, though. Other states offer graduation equivalencies, whether it's using coding to substitute for math, science, or even world language. We are not currently doing that yet, to my knowledge, in this state. Is that something you would support as a conceptually?
Well, that's a good question, and OCSGA, and I'll use that acronym to mean Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association, and then I'll also say I personally believe, so that we don't get too confused here, and maybe they're the same, but as president, I suppose it could be. But in the case of dual credit, say for the example, these girls take a Java class. They are in two semesters or two trimesters, they're programming capable to possibly go out and get a job. So what is that worth? And what is it worth to, and what can happen for an administrator to have and the incentive to move FTE towards high-tech ed? All right, so maybe that this answers your question of if it is counted as math credit, maybe that would support or encourage an administrator to really buy into adding those programs. But ODE does have a method for which computer science can be counted, but it's as math credit, but it's not well embraced by the system. ODE is making efforts to make that an easier suggestion or lockdown in a district to be able to do that. I hope that we're going to see a little more that's a smoother process here in the next few months. As far as language go, you know, as the definition is, it's a foreign language versus computer language. It's something that gives these students a chance to think differently with different phrases and words and problems solve using different tracks to the end of the game. So I am a proponent of programming being meeting the idea of what foreign languages would be. Now, the idea of several states adopting that as high school graduation credit, you know, I'm not going to say exactly how that should happen. I know that my administrator having the ability to count these courses as math credit and or language credit, it would be an incentive to put a little more FTE and effort into these programs, and it may help.
Can I follow up?
Okay. Quick follow-up.
Thanks. On the cost side, there are certainly, you know, Measure 98 appropriates like $800 per student. And the cost side to deliver some of these programs, there are, you know, Treehouse, there's Apple, there's a lot of folks who have this curriculum. And you mentioned sort of the, if they did two quarters of this, what would that actually look like in terms of a job? I mean, the U.S. Bureau of Labor published about a week and a half ago that we need 1 million coders in the next 3 years in this nation. So when you look at something that is sort of a lower cost, it's not like standing up an auto shop program, lower cost delivery of STEM with the job needs. I mean, I'm hopeful that your organization can get behind some of the legislation that's in this building that will do that.
Well, OCSGA is teachers training teachers. We don't have the ability to come down here and encourage Margaret Doherty, Representative Doherty, to do what she may or may not want to do. But we are a vehicle, a training vehicle. We also have answers for curriculum. If an administrator says, I don't have curriculum, we have curriculum. You know, you mentioned a couple of them. That's what we do is we are teachers who are in the trenches with curriculum and successful and model programs, and we can just hand them off and they're turnkey, and we train good teachers to deliver this content. Some of it through the wire, some of it direct instruction. So we can be the answer, but the political pressure, yeah, we support and definitely know that these girls are on that, you know, they're lucky. They're on that train for high demand, high pay career path. I mean, they've got a mate. You want to get a loan from them in about 10 years, then yeah, we'll maybe work that out. But that is the point. And the sad thing is that nearby school districts and other school districts in Oregon, they don't have that opportunity. It's an opportunity gap. Mm-hmm. And OCSGA, we're trying to solve that. We have our students in Sherwood are lucky because of the broad range of CTE programs available. So to be the political force, I'm not sure. to be the answer to how it's done, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have not started coding yet. At least I don't think I have.
He's trying to remember his area code.
Yeah, that's right. So I'll, and obviously I'm running out of time to learn. Did want to ask you, though, a question about coding. And if you were talking to students in other lands around the world, would you be basically talking the same language? I mean, coding, common language? Would you all be able to make the same points about what you're doing and compare notes?
Yeah, coding is a universal language. It's something that no matter what country you're in or what language you speak, you can learn how to code in Ruby or Java. So we would explain it like we do now to any other place or country. Okay. Or yeah.
Right, great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Chair. I am so excited as a Metro Master Recycler to hear that you're doing like coding for a recycling project is fantastic. I'm excited to hear that you are interested in helping that younger generation come and have the experience that you are, because we all know that ultimately that peer-to-peer type of training is the best type of training that we can get. We can offer, and I would say that Savannah Loberger has done a great program with the Girls Get It, through Hillsboro, through Hillsboro High School. And so looking at programs like with Dawn Domes had really started and working on there, they really reached out and looked how they could encourage and get that younger generation excited about this. So I just encourage you ladies, with all the energy and excitement that you have about this, spread it. I mean, get it going. Help that younger generation to do this work. You had mentioned, you said 25%. Is it high school districts that offer programs like this? And the reason I mentioned it is because you had said, you know, you were concerned about redirecting the plane that's in the air. My concern when I was thinking about that, thinking, gosh, we have like 75% of those school districts that don't even have a plane off the tarmac. So I think that it's just really exciting to me is to be able to say, look at a successful program. How can we get that going and excited about utilizing Measure 98 money, utilizing those CTE programs in those school districts that, you know, don't have programs like this? So did you say 25% school districts or high school?
I'd like to clarify the number, if I will. The our research through ODE resources and our own cold calling of school districts and high schools to say, do you offer this class? Mm-hmm. And we distilled it down to at least one coding class. And of the 325 degree-granting high schools in Oregon, only 69 have a class. And in many of them, it's just one class. We're talking about HTML to Java, but it's usually just one class. The challenge we have with staffing, if we become successful, if 98, another thing that I worry about 98 is that we're drinking from a fire hose here. And if, in fact, it's successful, we are not going to be able to find high-tech teaching staff. We're going to do the best we can to train them, but it's going to be difficult. But the coverage of students in Oregon is very, very poor. But I mean, there's hope in that the culture and the politics have an interest in it improving from 20% or 25% to more. But how is that going to happen? I'm going to be bold enough to say that it takes a rising tide floats all boats, and so what it means is that a well-funded education system, mm-hmm. and we're talking about 8.4 plus, mm-hmm. you know, this is how I can get into the politics here a bit and say, my 38 years, I have seen deficits, challenges every time I come to a school year, and it's been very frustrating. But, you know, having adequately funded a system will allow an administrator to say, what is good for my students? And they will. I expect that they would answer curriculum that is career-based and answers that high-tech, high-demand opportunity for all students.
Right. Okay. And I'd like to think, Mr. Smith was on my bargaining team when I had the Sherwood teachers, so he's always been very quiet and reticent. His voices haven't come out. But I do have a final question for the young ladies on the panel. It's just kind of start and tell me, what do you like the best about your coding club?
Thank you. I like that I'm able to reach girls that I wouldn't necessarily see in my classes. Like, I met Brooke through coding classes, and we were 2 of 42. So it's really nice to be able to see the other girls that have had the same experience, or maybe been the only girl, or weren't lucky enough to find a friend in their coding class, that we're able to provide a place for them to feel more comfortable learning among their friends that we'll have forever, will always be a part of the club. Yes. And be friends.
When you start your own high-tech company.
Exactly.
My favorite part is probably watching the girls who join that are like, this is impossible, what is coding, to evolve to actually understanding it and being like, oh, this isn't that hard. And they start taking more classes at the high school through T. Smith, because we have a really good computer science department. In the fact that we actually have a computer science department. And
you're lucky.
It's great to see them learn and realize that it's not that hard once you really take the classes. And I love seeing people create stuff that they didn't think they would do. Like, my friend Elise, she made like a GIF through coding, and she was like, oh my gosh, like, this is wild. And just seeing them create stuff that they never thought they could do before, that's probably my favorite part.
That's good. What's your favorite part?
My favorite part would definitely be, like, the opportunity that, like, coding would, like, give me in, like, this club and, like, the classes that we have at the high school. Like, I'm, like, really interested in both art and science, and, like, coding is just something that has been able to, like, bring it together for me. So, I'm able to, like, do programs that help me create, like, animations or, like, create music like I'm, like, learning how to do right now. It's just, like, there's so much opportunity out there that, like, the possibilities for, like, jobs or, like, ways to change the future are, like, so endless, and it's really exciting. And having this club and, like, seeing other people, like, get excited about it too, it, like, makes it all worth it.
Because you were the young woman that had the music, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, any other quick questions? We've got to finish.
Follow up just
5 minutes ago. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Do you guys have a school foundation, like a Sherwood Schools Foundation or anything like that? I recommend connecting with them, because our Hillsborough Schools Foundation really has helped get a lot of coding classes and things involved in our younger. And I'm just telling you, your energy will inspire and get other kids excited about this, and just encourage you to keep going. Appreciate your energy.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
And thank you guys so much for taking some of your spring vacation for coming down and educating us. I appreciate it very much. And thanks, Tara.
Thank you.
So with that, I will close the informational hearing on the Sherwood High School Women's School Coding Program. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2763. Alethea, if you could read what the bill is.
Yeah. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2763 establishes the Accomplished Teachers Program within the Oregon Department of Education. It allows programs to distribute monies for purposes of encouraging teaching excellence in public schools by subsidizing the application fee for the National Professional Organization for Teaching Standards, and provides monies to be used on seminars and providing annual bonuses for teachers who hold national board certification. This bill has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Hey, thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. This may not be as exciting. my 12-year-old is doing coding, my grandson, 12-year-old.
They can teach
and I was in the Pentagon when Vice President Gore invented the Internet. So.
Introduce the Internet. Yes, thank you.
Madam Chair, Vice Chairs and Honorable Committee Members, thank you for hearing House Bill 2763 relating to National Board Certification for Teachers. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. And also, Alita, thank you for all your help. And I think I've been in this committee. Can I get a name tag? So I'm a big part of the committee. I understand the committee heard testimony during the last interim from Heather Anderson, Oregon's 2016 Teacher of the Year. And she introduced you to the National Board Certification for Teachers programs. Before your hearing, I had met Heather, and we discussed her work on Oregon's National Board Certification for Teachers program, among other educational issues. Also, during the summer, I met with other Ben Lapine National Board Certification teachers through Amy Savadini. Love to say those Italian names. In the Ben area, we held several meetings with NCBT teachers to educate me and discuss how to expand Oregon's number of National Board Certification teachers. As a member of the National Conference of State Legislators Education Committee, I contacted their education staff and received information and encouragement to pass legislation. I was lucky to find a strong supporter and co-chief sponsor to help me move legislation with Representative Barbara Smith Warner. She and Representative Comp had passed a bill to try to put together a funding to find money for this. We also gained chief sponsorship from Senators Dembrough, Canope, and Representative Jody Hack. We've held work group meetings with leaders from education agencies, nonprofit groups, and lobbyists. And I believe I can state that I'll support the goal of the bill, which is to increase the number of National Board Certified teachers, and believe the program will help us achieve teacher goals. For the fact is that Oregon has less than 1% of our teachers with this certification. However, our neighbors to the north have 15% of its teachers, and I'm afraid to say this, but North Carolina has 21% and a basketball team. We have received many good suggestions on the details of how to make this program succeed. We will have amendments to you soon so we can pass this bill and move it to Ways and Means. For your information, I think on OLIS, I'm sure in all the spare time you have, there's a brochure from National Conference of State Legislators that Alita's put on the OLIS for you, and that came to us from the new superintendent of the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, who is also a National Board Certified teacher. We're going to hear in a minute after the representative speaks, from Heather Anderson on the podcast. And the chair provided me an article from Education Week about teachers seeking, so you might want to read that. But I think I'll end there. Urge you to please support this bill. And I'm sorry we don't have the final. We've worked hard to try to get the amounts of money and where it goes and how it's spent and who covers what. But we have all good inputs, and we're going to bring forth an amendment to you as soon as possible so you can move this down to Ways and Means. And I'll yield, and we'll have questions after the representative speaks. That's okay.
Thank you, Representative Wisnett. Colleagues, thank you so much for having us here today. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner. I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. We come before you, as he mentioned, with House Bill 2763, which seeks to increase the number of nationally board certified teachers in our state. So how I got involved in this is my daughter. I've got two kids in public schools, and my daughter had a national board certified teacher for fifth grade. And that teacher, Cindy Dulcich is her name, and she came to me early in the school year to talk to this about. She was very engaging with the parents in general, but she talked about this because she is a nationally board certified teacher herself and had a lot of great information about what can we do to support this in the state. And I gotta say, just she was one of those teachers who, she had just started at the school about 2 years before, and she's the teacher that you pray that your kid gets. And watching my daughter have a transformative year with her, but not just my daughter, everybody in that classroom, she would integrate the parents and the families. My favorite example is that she had volunteers, people who would come volunteer in her class, who were parents of students that she had taught years ago, who were so committed to her and the work that she did that they followed her around and became volunteers in whatever school that she ended up being at. She was, it was amazing. We all know accomplished teachers really make a difference in the classroom. All teachers make a difference in the classroom. And she's so compelling. So, however, as Representative Wisnett mentioned, we only have, just to give you a raw number idea, we only have about 300 board-certified teachers in this state, and less than 200 of them actually work in Oregon, because many of them work in other states, while Washington has nearly 18,000. You all heard from the Teacher of the Year during Ledge Days about the lack of board-certified teachers in Oregon. We are working, as he said, on Amendment 2763 because our goal is to increase the number of nationally board-certified teachers through any means with any funds. We are exploring the use of existing funds, the ESSA, Title IIA funds, or any other pot of money that we can find to achieve this. Our first priority is to encourage teachers to go through the program by help covering a portion of the actual program costs. Setting up bonuses for these teachers, specifically those who teach in Title I schools, is something we'd like to maybe look at in the future to keep those teachers in Oregon and working with our highest need students. But right now, we want to focus on how can we give them the supports to get through that training, because it's a very rigorous training, and it is a good chunk of cash. There's four section tests that you have to take, and just taking those four sections is almost $2,000. And with a teacher, a working teacher, they don't always have a lot of extra capital on hand to do that. So we are looking for any way we can encourage them. In addition, we know we need to establish support system for those board certified teachers who, as they go through the program, as well as in their classrooms after they've gotten certified. This is not a program that teachers should complete in a vacuum on their own. Instead, through the creation of regional networks with a collaborative leadership model, we can better support these teachers and leverage that experience and the expertise of their accomplished colleagues. So again, we are working hard to get the amendment to you as soon as possible, and I thank you for giving this consideration. And I believe, am I playing the video now?
Want to go ahead and hear the video first?
Is it very long?
No. Sorry?
Do we know how long
is it? Very long?
It's less than 5 minutes, isn't it? Three or four?
We can do that. Yes.
I'll still have you do it.
Yes, Representative Stewart is not good at computers.
I got to look at the work.
Sorry.
No, I don't think that's it. I think it was the one over here, not the Kelly video.
Right. Is that right? Okay. I'm sorry about that.
It's that one. It's right here.
Yeah. In this episode, Heather Anderson, an elementary teacher at Juniper Technology Magnet School in Bend, Oregon, will tell us how highly accomplished teaching elevates the profession. Here's Heather.
Dear Oregon legislators, teaching is a profession that's constantly evolving. Teachers are able to improve their practice through continued professional development. In January of 2016, I sat down with Representative Gene Wisnett of Central Oregon. He asked me when I plan to become an administrator. I responded that I'm a teacher and I don't plan to become an administrator. While we need strong administrators, it's also important to keep our best teachers in the classroom. Out of that conversation came the creation of a new bill that will be working its way through the legislature in 2017. The bill supports highly accomplished teaching by providing incentives, support, and professional development for teachers. Research shows that the National Board certification process positively increases test scores, as well as gains of an additional month of learning in the classroom. More importantly, this process encourages teachers to analyze and reflect on their teaching practice. This process is empowering. It's created by teachers, for teachers, and truly makes a difference in our teaching practice. We need more highly accomplished teachers in classrooms throughout Oregon. Oregon currently has a little under 300 National Board Certified Teachers, or NBCTs. Imagine the impact we can make as educators if we grow that number to 3,000 NBCTs, or 17,000 NBCTs. As our neighboring state, Washington, has done. By supporting our teachers through this process and providing a yearly stipend, that is possible. I became an NBCT in 2005 during my fourth year of teaching. During that time, I taught in Montgomery County, Maryland, in a high poverty school with failing test scores. I went through the national board process with 15 other teachers in my school in a cohort model. We collaborated and supported each other during this process, and we were able to become stronger teachers. Within a few years, we had increased test scores in our school from a 10% passing rate in grade 5 to 55%. then 75%, then 85%, until we had eventually closed the achievement gap in our school that was less than 1% white, 75% ELL, and 95% poverty. This process was truly transformative for me as a teacher, as well as for my school. With a group of teachers committed to this process, we were able to change the outcomes and teaching environment of the entire school. I would love to support teachers through this process in Oregon. We are working to align elements of highly accomplished teaching into pre-service, mentoring and induction support for novice teachers, and providing cohort support for professional teachers as they work to become highly accomplished. With support from the Oregon Education Association, TSPC, Oregon Department of Education, Oregon Chief Education Office, Pacific University, Oregon State University Cascades, Southern Oregon University, Portland State University, Chalkboard Project, and the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, we can make this possible for educators in Oregon. With more highly accomplished educators, we can positively impact students and empower teachers to be the best they can be. As Peggy Brookings, the president of the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, says, if students get the right instruction from the right person, there is no limit to what they can do.
Okay, great, thank you. Are there any questions of our esteemed panelists, even though I do believe you were talking basketball a moment ago, but that's okay.
That was a mistake.
Any questions? Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have basketball questions, but I do have questions in regards to we've looked at the investments that Washington has made. What have they done? Or she was from Maryland, is that correct?
Originally.
You know, where she was saying 15 of the teachers just in her school were going through this process. So have we looked at what they do to support this?
Madam Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. We're still looking at some of this stuff. We did get a feedback that about Florida, that Florida had to cut back on their, just because of the budget, had to cut back on what they were providing as a bonus. It's a lot of information out there, a lot of different state programs. I think the main thing we're seeking from this committee today is that we like the concept, we think it's worthwhile pursuing, and we're going to go out and see how it is. I think Representative Barbara Smith Warner did a great job in talking about, you know, the things we've got to come up with. Where do we find the money in this budget cycle? But I think it's important that we support the program, that we start the program. Again, the goal, and it's also, I think, a lot of people have asked, and well, to be sure, it is not mandated. You do not have to do this. Mm-hmm. It's volunteer. There's a lot of work and effort that goes into it, as Heather talked about. So I'm not an educator. I've been around it now for about 13 years, and I think it's worthwhile pursuing. And I think other states, if you look at the numbers, it's just so many states doing so many things and limited time to try to figure those out. But I think we have good people. I'm really hope to get some advice from our new director of teacher standards and practice. She was very active in it. They came under her in West Virginia, this program did.
Because it's always been a matter of money, because it's quite expensive to become a national teacher, and then afterwards. So I know that money's been the biggest roadblock in the state of Oregon. Not necessarily desire, but the money to do it.
And if Excuse I may, me. Madam Chair, Representative Solomon, I think one of the interesting things, if you take a look at the information from NCSL that's in OLIS, different states have gone about this different ways. And so we're trying to we're taking a little bit of a mishmash effort at, okay, given that we are in this limited budget situation, what are some of the things we can do? And the biggest feedback we've gotten is indeed the financial, you know, helping the teachers get there, and also though making sure they have that, get into that collaborative network, whether it's Jumpstart that the Oregon Education Association helps to try to form some of those collaboratives. Chalkboard has done some work on having cohort groups in that. Those are the big kind of beginning points that we are looking at, is to both help them financially and also give them that the support structure around them that will help them to be successful.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Madam Chair, let me just also, to be sure, if it's okay, to clarify, again, the objective is increase the number we have. So we're going to look at how much money we have and figure out, like, our goal may be, you know, that we can grow it 50 a year, 100 a year, or whatever, but to get that number up.
So what we're going to be dealing with is the policy and whether it's good policy to go on to Ways and Means. So.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next, we have Joel Fisher, Iris Maria Chavez, and Jared Mason Gear. I've only known him for however many. Okay. You are... Okay, whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, everyone. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Iris Maria Chavez, and I work with a coalition of Oregon's community-based charter schools. Came here today to talk to you in support of House Bill 2673. As schools that are interested in innovation and developing both students and educators, our charter schools feel strongly that this opportunity is something that would be of incredible value to not only charter schools but schools across the state. We recognize that at the moment, over 86% of charter school teachers are fully licensed and would be eligible to participate in the National Board Certification process. And finding ways that we can better support our educators to professionalize them or to get increased professional development will only do better to help the students in our classrooms. As we know, about 50% of teachers who are nationally board certified are teaching in Title I schools. So these are students who are really in need of having the strongest educators in front of them. Given that, we would like to ensure that Representative Wisnett and Representative Barbara Smith Warner are given the opportunity to work on this bill to find ways to make it possible for us as Oregonians to provide this type of professional development to educators.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, here on behalf of the Oregon Business Association and Oregon Associated Oregon Industries. We're two separate business associations that are in the process of merging, and we are working with one shared agenda this session, and so I'm here representing both of them. The Oregon Business Association and Associated Oregon Industries support robust education funding and targeted investments focused on four primary areas. I've come up with a couple of hand signals to help illustrate these. Reducing chronic absenteeism, improving our graduation rate, closing the achievement gap, and increasing equity. OBA AOI has been supportive of policies that support teachers in advancing their profession and classroom outcomes, and we're supportive of the many great recommendations made by the Governor's Council on Educator Advancement. Increasing the number of nationally board certified teachers in Oregon is one of those recommendations. Cindy Dulcich, the teacher that Representative Barbara Smith Warner mentioned her child had gone through a year with, came to the Oregon Business Association, talked about this program to us, explained the importance of it, the outcomes that it produces, and asked for our support. And here we are supporting it. A license to teach shows that a teacher has met the minimum standard required to teach in this state. But nationally board certified teachers have proven that they have gone above and beyond. They possess the knowledge, skills, and practices of a highly accomplished teacher. Nationally board certified teachers are proven to be more effective. Students in their classroom, as you've heard, learn 1 to 2 months more per school year than other students without nationally board certified teachers. Nationally board certified teachers produce even larger gains for low-income students. We don't have enough nationally board certified teachers in Oregon, and we're here to ask you to encourage, do what we can to encourage and support more teachers to and through national board certification. And in an effort to close the achievement gap, we need to make sure we pay special focus to ensure that we're not only supporting teachers through that certification program, but getting them to the schools with most highest need students where those teachers are needed most. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Jared?
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Jared Mason Gear, representing the Oregon Education Association and our 44,000 educators across the state. First, just really want to express thanks to Representative Smith Warner and Representative Wisnett for the work on this bill and Representative Wisnett's ongoing outreach to our members in Central Oregon. He works really closely and spends a lot of time in classrooms and our members over there, and I personally really appreciate that work and his inclusion and walking us through the work group on this bill. We had some pretty strong concerns. Well, I guess just by way of context, And to be really clear, OEA supports the NBCT program, and we actually do a lot of work within our organization to support those efforts. So we run a program called Jumpstart at OEA that is designed to sort of spread the gospel of National Board Certification to members, support them in their application process, and continue to support them as they enter into the board certification process. It's a very rigorous program, and it's one that for a teacher that doesn't sort of have a mentor and support system to help them get through it can be very difficult. So we think that's a really valuable program that has helped a lot of our members get engaged. And so we are really strong believers in the program, the efficacy in improving teacher practice, advancing their practice. I do want to just say for the record that and be really clear that NBCT is not the only way for a teacher to advance their practices. It's not the only way for a teacher to exhibit this skill or professionalism. As an educator, it is a way, and it is a way that we do think is effective, and so we've been grateful to be included in this process. Some things that I think are important, I know that Representative Smith Warner and Representative Wisnett are working on amendments to this bill, but I wanted to just flag some of the items that we do think are really important to address as we're moving forward in this conversation. So one is around, I think there is some complexity in how do you administer the financial support to an educator who goes through this program. So we have advocated for increased supports in the form of a stipend to help educators who are going through, because it is costly to pay the admittance fee. We do have concern that, you know, from our perspective, if you look at how compensation and benefits are determined in Oregon, it is through the collective bargaining process. And from our perspective, that is the place where pay and benefits should be determined, full stop. And so I do think that it's important that the bill has a mechanism for allowing any compensation that goes forward to be determined at the bargaining table between the local and the school district. I think also, you know, recognizing that it's going to be important to have some kind of monetary incentive for a educator to continue to teach at the Title I school. And so finding that right balance and how to move forward will be important, I think, in order for this bill to be totally effective. Another piece is that the funding is going to have to be stable. If we do one-time funding and that funding is not there going forward, that's problematic, because helping members get into this program and then not continue to support them as they go through and then support them when they've completed the program, in many ways defeats the purpose. And knowing our state's record of continuing to fund programs stably, I just think that we want to make sure that we have the mechanism locked in and figured out before we get too far down this path. And then just to sort of reiterate, it was highlighted for me again today, we have OEA members in the building today, and I was visiting with a member who's taught for 3 years, a really energetic teacher here in Salem Kaiser, and she was just notified that her position has been eliminated. That's something that is happening across the state right now in districts everywhere, and we need to figure out funding in Oregon for the very most basics, and then begin moving forward to fund programs like this. This program, I think, is really exciting and could be very beneficial to Oregon, but so too are small class sizes and not laying off teachers every couple of years. So that's our feedback. Really appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, is there like a sweet spot or a time that you recommend teachers to go into this program? They have to be a teacher for so long before they can do this, or?
Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon, thanks for the question. That's something I'm not certain that there is a best practice on that. I think customarily with the educators who've gone through our Jumpstart program, they are educators who have been in the classroom for some time. It's not typical that somebody would come out of a teacher prep program and then go automatically into it. I think, and you know, frankly, I think it would be, I'd be happy to find some educators who have gone through that could share some of their experience, because I think that's probably more beneficial than anything that I would say today. But I think being able to draw upon their actual classroom experience and kind of look back and process the work that they're doing in the classroom at the same time that they're going through the program is advantageous. So I don't think that there's a set time, but typically they are educators who've been in, you know, five-ish years before they enter the program.
May I? Representative Doherty, Representative Solomon, the National Board certification process does have requirements in place for how long a teacher has been in the classroom, has been a licensed educator. I don't have that number with me specifically, but I do believe it's in the one of the pieces of testimony that Representative Wisnett submitted through OLIS.
Okay.
So you could find that answer there.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative McLean.
To the last speaker, I want to acknowledge I'm on this bill as a sponsor, but I do want to acknowledge your comment about budget this year. I'm on this bill because of the fact that I think there are some real good opportunities for support of teachers, generally speaking, with this program. So I agree with you on that. But I do think that we're in an unusual setting this year, whether it be measures that were put on the ballot or whether there be exciting policy ideas that this committee has, that we all have to face the reality of we have to fund our regular basic program needs, and that starts with teachers in the classroom, starts with, you know, equipment and supplies, and we have to make sure that we can do that first before we do any of the extras. And I don't see this as an extra in the sense of a policy idea. I see it as an extra this year as a budget idea. And so I'm going to be looking forward to seeing what Representative Winsett and Representatives Smith-Warner has and the ideas of where there might be resources that would not take away from the basic needs or the basic budget, but would assist us in supporting teachers in a real way.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, with that, we finished the closing, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2763 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3138. If you want to, Alethea, give a little summary.
Yeah. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3138 allows school districts and one or more community colleges to receive funding for a proposed K-20 partnership. It requires applications describe the vision for partnership and have decision makers who include teachers, faculty members, school administrators, and administrators from community college, along with superintendents and community organization representatives. It allows these partnerships to coordinate student education, create innovative educational collaboration projects, and to coordinate communications among their partners.
Okay, Representative Bueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And I have a relatively straightforward and easy bill for you to consider here this afternoon. It's House Bill 3138. And we've all heard over the years, I'm sure in this committee more than almost any other, about statistics that we'd like to see improved in Oregon with regards to our graduation rate, absentee rate, quality rankings, and such. But I don't think it's enough just to hear the statistics. We have to start taking action and try to come up with some solutions to these problems, and I have one before you today. I think we need to look for innovation and partnerships to make our K-12 schools of higher quality and more attractive, not only to our students, but to parents and to employers. And one idea, which has some initial basis in actually a very successful program in Portland between Jefferson High and Portland Community College, is to break down those silos between K-12 and our higher education institutions. This comes to you specifically with the idea to create something very similar in Bend. There's a lot of interest in Bend to create a magnet high school focused on innovation and entrepreneurship. And ideally, we'd like to copy the model of Jefferson and Portland Community College and link it up with a very similar effort at OSU Cascades. They'd like to form an innovation center for entrepreneurship. So putting the Magnet High School next to that new center at OSU Cascades is the real objective. We'd like to encourage other school districts to form those partnerships and break down the silos between K-12 and higher education, and thus this bill. This bill simply would form an application, encourage, and provide some grant funding to allow those partnerships to form. So I'd encourage your support. I'd welcome your support and certainly take any questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions of Representative Bueller. Representative Evans.
Yeah, just a question and a comment. The first question is, how is this different than an educational service district partnership?
Madam Chair, Representative Evans, my understanding is that those don't have partnerships with higher education, such as universities and community colleges.
a follow-up? Because the much-vaunted Eastern Promise and Willamette Promise are through the ESD, and they include universities, community colleges, at least until Shemeketa pulled out of it. So I don't understand.
Madam Chair, my understanding, Eastern Promise is more for a scholarship for students to go to those colleges. At least that's my understanding. I may be wrong there. This would be more that there's a partnership to help with curriculum development and build those relationships while the students are still in their high school years.
Well, by explanation, a partnership between Portland Community College and Jefferson High School, and proximity is very close. Of them is they literally do work together on programs, and most of them, a lot of them are technical programs to go through. And so when the kids get out of high school, they have a lot of training. They've just been working with the community colleges, sometimes for 2 years. And so it's just kind of a dual. They're a graduate of Jefferson High School, but they also consider themselves almost graduates of PCC. And so they have worked together in tandem with the idea of Jefferson High School saying, this is kind of what our students are looking for, and then PCC saying, this is what we can do.
I thought that legal authority already existed through ESDs to do that. That's why I was trying to figure out the vehicle here.
It doesn't always work in all ESDs, so okay.
Good idea, just trying to figure out the difference in structure.
Yeah, and my understanding, the students at Jefferson High School can generate up to 40, 45 credits while concomitantly going to high school.
Mm-hmm. So. I know that Tigard High School has also, it's not a formal partnership, but also with PCC, and a lot of the kids end up with 40, 45 credits by the time they graduated from high school.
If I may, Madam Chair, I think it's one of the reasons that Jefferson High School has one of the most successful graduation rates in the entire state. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think this has an awful lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Representative Stolman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also intrigued. You know, I serve on the higher education workforce development, and when you're looking at programs that that happen like at Rogue Community College, where they have like a welding program, and the opportunity for us to partner with those community colleges to offer that first rung of that ladder on that welding program with high school students, so that they can go on to deeper part of that curriculum. I mean that degree, but get some of it taken care of while they're in high school. And I think this is a great way to look at Measure 98 funds, you know, to be able to utilize those funds through there.
Madam Chair, if I may comment, I agree completely in the high-tech community in Central Oregon, specifically interested in this concept around coding. You know, there's lots of coding jobs out there, and they're more than willing to reach out and deeper into K through 12, and specifically high school, to teach students the latest coding. The high-tech community in Central Oregon is a little frustrated that higher ed is not producing students with the necessary coding skills, so they feel like if they just partner with the high schools, they may be able to get those skills without the kids actually spending a whole lot to get formal degrees, actually. So.
Okay, thank you.
Three coders.
I know.
Those
three coders.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if
you're right there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few questions. So ODE would be administering this grant. What's the selection process if there were multiple school districts and higher ed institutions applying for it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Hernandez. ODE would develop that application and criteria and allocate those grants.
Okay. And follow up?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're asking for $2,500,000 to start the project?
Yeah, that's right.
Do you know, in your mind or your opinion, what kind of results were you hoping for with that amount of money? Or do you have a long-term view of how much this could cost and what direction you're headed towards?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Hernandez. I think the amount is not so important as encouraging that these partnerships form. And then, I think any time that we have new inputs, especially funding inputs, we should ask for specific outputs. And in this case, I'd like to see outputs such as improved graduation rates and program development, and also encouraging more partnerships with employers so that we're really matching the needs of employers to what students are becoming educated.
Okay. One more. Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you, in coming up with this, did you speak to ESDs and determine what they already do or don't have the capacity to do, and if they would be the great hub to be able to administer this?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, President Hernandez. This came more in consultation with Bend Lapine Schools and their efforts to form that partnership with OSU Cascades and their Magnet High School. So this is more focused on a school district level consultations. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative Bueller.
Thank you.
Okay. We have no one else signed up for this bill. So with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3138 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3029. Alethea, if you want to tell us what it is, and then Representative Hayden.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3029 changes the allowance from 5 years of age to require students who have been enrolled in public schools to be 5 or 6 years of age, and it changes compulsory school age from 6 to 7 years of age. There is a -2 amendment which replaces the contents of the measure. It allows children to not be required to attend public full-time school if the parents or legal guardians of the children who are 6 years old have received acknowledgement from the district that delay in enrolling the child will better meet the child's needs for cognitive, social, or physical development. The -2 amendment.
Okay. Representative Hayden, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty, and Vice Chair Hernandez and Wilson. My name is Cedric Hayden, State Representative from House District 7. I know I'm here to climb a little bit of a hill today, and I'm hoping to take you along that journey with me. The concept was laid out, and I want to just not take too much time, but kind of lay out the scenario that is out there for parents. And look for a little bit of an opportunity, I think, for parents with children of special needs. So on our journey, what you will find on OLIS is the second meeting material there where it talks about PPS, talented and gifted. What this refers to is the Portland Public Schools have a program that they call they're talented and gifted. What that means is if you have a student and you're in the Portland School District, I didn't look up the rest of the school districts, and you believe that your child is talented and gifted, you can apply for that child to enter the K through 12 system earlier than the September 1st date of 5 years old. So you have an opportunity if your child is determined to be a gifted child to amend or to adjust the school age, the minimum school age, not the compulsory school age. And looking into that program, I found that Portland School District did grant that to 19 students. I don't know how that would equate to across the state, but when we looked at the compulsory school age last year of students going at 7 years of age, it was actually there was one report that said 86 and one report that said 84 students had not entered school at the age of six, meaning that the numbers of students that are probably statewide being granted a talented and gifted exemption may be close to the ones that were being delayed, meaning not starting till 7 years of age. I want to talk about what it means, what that means if you have a student that is one day, say July 15th or July 31st or August. I want you to look at the next document on here that has to do with baseball. What does baseball have to do with education? Well, there's a phenomenon that's referred to as the birth month as it applies to people in society, meaning that Little League for many years, 1965 to 2006, said that if you were born before August 1st, meaning if you were born in July, you would be qualified to enter Little League to start your baseball career. If you were born August 1st and beyond, you had to wait basically 12 more months. And so some people wanted to look at that and say, all right, so how does that affect children that work through the Little League and on to high school and college and actually make it to the ultimate to be into the Major League Baseball? And so they looked at players that were born in the U.S. in August, and they looked at players that were born in the U.S. in July, and they found that players that started that Little League were twice as likely to make it to the National League of Baseball. Two times as many players born in August as in July. So if the child didn't enter Little League, missed it by a day, they had twice the likelihood of attaining their goal. They also looked at that study and said, okay, so for all of these people that actually made it to Major League Baseball, is there a difference in their performance once they get there? And that was the phase two of the study that I don't have on here. And the answer to that was no. Both of those people, both of those classes, were able to adjust and attain basically the same statistics in baseball and the same success level. How does that apply to us? When a child is entering into the educational system and that child has concerns developmentally or is developmentally delayed in our education system, on the first one of your materials there, they go through a system called the Bracken Basic concept of school readiness. You have an example here of an actual child that has been through this system, and what they want to determine is this child having the basic school readiness, meaning can they identify colors, can they identify letters, can they pick out numbers and shapes? And they have a scoring for that, which is before you, and that point scoring, the average student entering kindergarten or first grade will be able to score between 90 and 110 points. Yet in this example, this child scored 50 points. This child was 6 years old. They were born in October, and when you look at the summary there, the summary says that looking at their pre-academic skills, the results of the assessment suggest the child is just in the beginning of the development of the basic academic skills. She primarily identifies colors. She also is developing her ability to identify shapes and is able to understand basic language concepts. The level of education function is significantly delayed approximately 2 years. This is a six-year-old that is delayed 2 years. If this was a gifted child that was within that month range, they would be able to excel and go forward. If it is a child that is developmentally delayed, there is no option for the parents to apply. Say, my child is 20 pounds lighter, my child is 3 inches shorter, and my child has not achieved, even according to your own system where you look at these, has not even achieved a 0.1 percentile of the achievement of these basic skills. That means that child is not potty trained. That child can't pick out numbers yet. For many children that are disabled, they will be able to, if you look at a Down syndrome child or different types of syndromes, we've got many, many rare diseases out there. Many of these children can achieve a third or fourth grade competency level, but it takes them 10 or 15 years to get there. The point is, why are we wanting to rush these children into kindergarten at 5 or 6 years of age when their physical weight, their physical size, is much closer to a 2 or a 3 or a 4 year old. I think there ought to be an opportunity, something that is equivalent to a gifted child that we have available for four-year-olds to enter kindergarten. If a child is developmentally delayed, why shouldn't they be able to fit in with their peers? Why shouldn't they be able to wait one more year, 12 more months, so that they look the same as their class, they weigh the same as their class, and their ability to pick out colors and numbers are at least closer to their classmates? Thank you.
Okay, any questions? So,
pardon? Ask about the video.
There is a video. So I have a video of this child in closing, if we can play that.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
While we're getting the video queued up, may I ask a question?
Please.
The video's going to be sideways?
Yeah, it's going to be sideways.
Okay, we have a question before the video starts.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden.
Yes, sir.
So what is the law currently? If a parent decides they would like to hold a child back a year, what happens?
Well, there is no exception. They would be fined for not meeting the compulsory age.
Clarification, but if they're homeschooled or in a private school or a parochial school.
But they have to be in a school. You can say I'm homeschooled or I'm doing this or I'm doing that. But they have to be in some.
Well, that's what I thought. Follow up, Madam Chair. So if I held back my child because I felt like they weren't ready and taught them at home and registered with the ESD, told them I was doing that, but then next year decided, yeah, not quite ready for second grade, I'm going to put them in first grade. Am I okay under the law?
Well, it's up to your school district to decide whether you're going to be able to hold them back or not hold them back individually. The school district's going to make that decision. I know they're not likely to approve that, but that is an option for you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, mine were all on that same level of discussion, because my understanding was, you pointed out that it was, you know, so I totally agree with your basic premise, but my understanding was that there was a district-by-district process. Each of the district processes may not look alike, but that a parent at any time can request a delay and go through whatever that district process is. Is that not what you found?
That is incorrect.
Okay.
Before, there is a process for you to get your child in before. If you want to delay past, until 2015, the compulsory age was range between 5 and 7, which is like Washington, and Idaho is 8. And then we changed the law, and I point out that passed 31-29 on the House floor, so barely passed. And so we reduced that range, if you will, of availability of parents to choose when their child, rather than choosing between 5 and 7, now they have 5 and 6. What I'm simply asking for with the dash 2 is to have a process like you're talking about. You know, we're talking about children that aren't potty trained. We're talking oftentimes, you know, have medical devices that help them be ambulatory. We're not talking about parents that are trying to avoid school. Mm-hmm. We're talking about parents that have their kids engaged in preschool. They may be engaged in a private program, but they're not yet ready to engage in the K-12 system. Our law in Oregon requires that you engage in the K-12 system. I'm saying there should be an exemption for children with special needs that would benefit from one more year of not engaging yet in that K-12 system. That doesn't mean that those kids aren't going to be engaging somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, we're wanting them to be engaged. We just, I feel like they ought to have the opportunity not to be there if there's a benefit for them. This is going to be a very small number of children, and this isn't something that we would want the education system to decide, meaning that we wouldn't want them to say, well, we're not going to fund an IEP for your child, so we think they should wait. This would be a parent's decision if they want to delay that.
And so if I can, so the child may not be getting any services for their disability for the year that they're waiting?
Well,
I mean, if they're not in school, they would not be getting school assistance?
it would allow the parents to choose the services that they want rather than having to choose the K through 12 system. So I'm not advocating the child not getting any services. We would like them to continue the services that they were getting. When a child is born that's disabled, they start getting services basically at birth,
right?
And so we want to continue those services, and that can include a physical therapist, occupational therapist, speech therapist. Those services are provided to those children. Those services would continue to be provided to those children. They're just not, in some cases, just not ready to have the child in the kindergarten environment yet, because they want them to get a little bigger, a little stronger, to fit in a little more with their peers. So they continue those other services for that year.
Okay.
I'm still trying to figure out logistically how this works. I'm thinking of the student who has some identified needs, and mom and dad aren't ready yet to put them in the school. In the brick and mortar school, so I don't see that they're prevented from homeschooling, whatever that looks like for them, homeschooling their student. And if you're in a charter school, you're in, I think, if you're being homeschooled, you still have access to ESD support services, certainly if you're in a charter school.
If they go through the process.
And so I haven't yet been able to identify the gap of service that this bill is trying to solve.
This bill is trying to solve the concern that parents with special needs children have that their child is moved through the system. And go the next year and the next year and the next year and the next year to get them just expedited, basically, to get moved through the system, where an extra year or small amount of time in the beginning would pay great dividends for them to stay in that pre-readiness area. Now, our education system for special needs children pays up till 21, right, to help them get into the educational system. And one of the detracting arguments is, well, you know, if this child spends one more year at the 4 or 5 year old level, they won't be ready by the time they're 21. The reality, most of these folks, the ones that can go on to work, they're going to be in an environmental where those basic skills, those skills of being able to say numbers, go to the bathroom by themselves, wash their hands by themselves, are the important skills that they need to be a greeter somewhere, or they need to hold that job. And so rather than putting them in an environment that is more intimidating to them, where they're smaller, where they're less able to fit in physically, all we're saying is let's delay the 4 and 5 year old, right? Let's delay that so they can gain another 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 pounds so they look more like their peers. It is only going to help them on the end of it. It's not more expensive. It's not going to extend past their age 21. It's going to give them a better chance to fit their program at their age when they enter kindergarten, just like the gifted children get when their parents advocate for them, that say, my child's gifted, so they need to fit in with their peer group, so they need to come in at 4. Parents with children that society says aren't gifted would like that same opportunity.
Okay. Before we go on to other questions, we need to get Matt back here, and he needs to run the video. So if we could run the video and then follow up with questions.
This is was my closing. Quick, go ahead. Okay.
That.
Oh, that was
loud. That.
Okay, kind of look at the word. Let's look at the letters. What did I say?
Dad. Dad.
What did it say?
Dad. Thank you, everyone. See you.
So that's an example of a homeschool environment that the child is working to learn letters, to learn colors, to learn names, and possibly is benefited by waiting a little while.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Madam Chair. And technical question regarding the bill. As I read, because the bill in essence is the dash twos.
Correct.
As I read that, we're not, this would apply to any family that chose for cognitive, social, or physical development needs to have the child's entry delayed 1 year. Is this prescribed? Is there anything in here that delineates that's just for kids with special needs? I'm not seeing it. If it is
not currently, but I think
a benchmark kind of thing, or
I read it to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, I read it to say that if I think my child needs more time for cognitive, social, or physical development, I'm going to delay. I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. I'm asking if that's what it means, and I get to be the determiner of those cognitive, social, and physical development.
Correct.
Areas.
That's what it reads. And behind me, Department of Education would like to put a little more sideboards around that. But I think they're willing to work with us on it.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you. That's the only person. Oh, do we have some others signed up for it? Jan McComb, Richard Donovan, and Lori Wimmer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Donovan on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. Just up here to kind of register some concerns that we have with the bill as amended by the Dash 2s. We agree with the concerns that Representative Hayden has raised that, I mean, these are kids that need services, very specific services that should probably appropriately delay enrolling in school and in school programs. Unfortunately, as I read the bill, the text of the bill is broader than that, and I would just urge a little caution. We only recently in 2015 with Senate Bill 321 moved the minimum age of attendance from 7 to 6 in the state of Oregon. We've only had the age 6 minimum requirement for a couple of years. It's generally considered good policy. Generally, evidence indicates that keeping kids in school more benefits them. This is especially true in the realm of equity, where you tend to have kids that attend school later and suffer disproportionately worse effects. It's certainly possible that we should have a method for exempting kids that need specific services like EIE, CSE, you know, those kind of services, but generally speaking, it's better for kids to have more school than others, and so more school than less. So I would urge the committee, before they kind of make a broad exception to compulsory age and attendance, to really consider that the policy and what the committee is trying to achieve. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, for your record, Lori Wimmer, representing Oregon Education Association and its 44,000 members, many of whom are in this building today, using their spring break to come to Salem. And I'm happy that they were nearby, because we also share a lot of the comments that Mr. Donovan just expressed. I would say that it may be that the best way to handle the particular group of kids that Representative Hayden was describing would be to have an IEP in the early intervention, early education, special services that enabled those kids to stay until they had reached certain benchmarks of development before they would be required to meet the age 6 compulsory attendance laws, as a better approach of getting at what he is hoping to achieve, rather than the more global moving it back up as you just had fixed for all students. And I say that again because, as we know, we have one of the shortest school years in the nation because of our underfunding of K-12, and the result is that by the time a student goes from kindergarten through grade 12, he or she is about one full school year behind a peer in Washington State in their public K-12 system. We know that in general terms, the more time you're able to spend in school, the better your educational outcomes for your lifelong achievement. And there is a lot of pressure on outcomes. Kindergartens, for example, are becoming more academic, less about play. Even elementary grades are. In some areas, they're even canceling recess, as you've heard me say before, with a misguided notion that doubling down on phonemic instruction will get you past that third grade reading benchmark better, because the outcomes dynamic is so intense. So while there is a problem apparently that needs to be addressed, we think that it might be better to do it from the preschool side of the equation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb with the Department of Education. The data we had collected back in 2015 showed that 99.7% of students were entering school as either 5 or 6 year olds. So we are talking about a small sliver of kids here. We're still trying to think through all of the possibilities, and we're happy to work with Rep. Hayden on those to try to think it through. For example, many school districts now have a waiver process to allow four-year-olds to enroll in kindergarten instead of waiting until they're five, and something similar could be crafted for older students. To Rep. Springer's point about being more specific about special ed students, we need to word things carefully so it doesn't look like we're discriminating against a group of students. And so we just have to be thoughtful in how we word this waiver possibility. Our understanding is that parents are still interested in having services delivered to their students. And right now, they have to be in a public school to have publicly funded services. And so there is the possibility that if they hold their kids out a year, that they would not be receiving services. And so I think that is an unintended consequence of the amended bill. And again, we're happy to keep looking at that to see if that can be changed. It's our federal or our Oregon kindergarten program mirrors the federal program, which is age defined. And so we would have to change some other statutes to lower the age or raise the age, rather, to make sure that services could be delivered. And then it's a funding issue. We haven't really, we're not meeting the needs now, and this would stretch it out. We're just doing back of the napkin calculations on 80 kids for a year, and it might be like 1.2 million, but don't hold me to that. So again, we understand what the point is. We're happy to work with him on how to address that in a way, and with your direction, can try to work on an amendment. The dash two amendment, our suggestions to him when we just read it was that they might want to make sure that the notice to school districts is in writing and that it clarify that it's being delayed for a year. Just little technical things that are missing. It's kind of written a little bit backwards, but we can help on that wording.
Okay, any questions of this panel? Representative McLean.
Well, I appreciate the clarity from your perspectives. I think that Representative Hayden has a real issue. I think that he has a real good heart about everything that he's trying to do on these issues. But what I did hear you say is that there's a possibility for working on this, which I like. Mm-hmm. And I also heard you say, I mean, I carried that last year, and I remember the 2931 because I think it was like the second bill I ever carried. And it was a situation where I heard both sides last year on the floor, too. And I don't want us to look heartless and or not listening, because I think that I like your idea of narrowing. I like your idea of a definite purpose or process for how a parent deals with this in a real-world situation. And my understanding was that, you know, you've got 95% of those school districts out there that do have a way to give a waiver, even if it's not a waiver that's been approved by the Department of Ed or, you know, the state or anybody else. But I think it's a real issue, and I hope that the chair will give some guidance on how we can work forward on what Representative Hayden is talking about.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, those are the only ones we had signed up, and hopefully you will be getting together and working together on this issue. Okay, no one else has signed up, so I'd like to close a public hearing on House Bill 3029. Do I have to open?
No.
And then we were going to hear House Bill 2997, but Representative Greg Smith is not be able to be here today to testify on House Bill 2997, and he is the bill sponsor. So therefore, we're carrying over House Bill 2997 as a public hearing and possible work session until Wednesday, March 29th. Okay? So
So with that, we adjourn. Okay. So with that, we adjourn.